This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
3 minutes after 12 is the time. I barely mentioned Mystery Hour and already you'll be struggling to get through if you're keen to contribute a question this week. But be patient, for opportunities will present themselves as the hour unfolds. For this is your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial. And when I say that, I mean, maybe no one else wants to provide this sort of satisfaction. I'd hate to sound boastful, but it's pretty much the only place where you are going to find it. Very simply put, someone rings in with a question, a mystery that needs solving, and someone else rings in with the answer. The only rules are these. Don't look stuff up if you're ringing in with the answer. You need to know it, and I will ask how you know it, and your answer will determine whether or not you go definitive. For example, you may have just watched it on telly last night. That's absolutely fine. Or you may have a PhD in the subject that you're just in the process of completing. So I guess that's it. Oh, and I bet I make you laugh. Well, not me personally, but I bet you do laugh between now and 1 o'clock, by which time you will almost certainly know more than you do now. One little clarification on the fines, the conversation between Theo and I. So you've got 53 men and 73 women fined, 28 of whom, I think, or at least a significant number of whom, have several fines, so between 2 and 5 fines. So we haven't actually got the total number of fines yet. I got that wrong, nobody else. I just didn't quite grasp it. And in response to our little interview there with Belegon Shorovitz, yes, I will tweet further details of this frankly incredible book. You've never seen anything like it. You buy a book and not only can you... Well, you can eat stuff, make stuff, wear stuff, and grow stuff as a consequence of learning from Bella's beautiful book. That's what she should have called it, Bella's beautiful book. 5 minutes after 12 is the time. No, of course she shouldn't. It's called Grow, Cook, Die, Wear. Mystery Hour is upon us. Jeffrey's in Basildon. Jeffrey, question or answer?
Hello, James.
Hello, Jeffrey.
Nice to talk to you.
We'll see.
Question, please.
Yes, carry on.
Okay. Recently, you were talking about the animal kingdom.
I was.
About why they call them pecs and shells and stuff like that.
Yeah, we never got an answer to that.
Did we not?
We never got an answer to the who where did collective nouns come from? Who dreams them up? Because some of them are absolutely brilliant. We learned some. What, yeah. Do you know it's a flamboyance of flamingos, Geoffrey?
I heard that on the show, but I
Me
didn't
too.
Know that before.
No, same, actually. Anyway, carry on.
Okay. Recently, I've been to Specsavers.
Oh, yes.
A long time overdue.
Yes.
And it kind of went to... I kind of thought, is there such... Do animals in the animal kingdom, whether it be wild animals or domestic animals, does their eyes change?
Yes.
Are they sometimes short-sighted or long-sighted?
Oh, okay. You don't mean... Because we know that dogs, we know that animals can lose their sight, I think.
I've not heard that.
No, they can. I think a dog can go, for example, can go blind. They don't have very good vision in the first place, so oddly it doesn't affect them much, because they rely upon other senses to get around. But that's not quite what you're asking. You're asking more about...
Yes, I'm asking about...
Long-sighted and short. So you need glasses later in life. You're never going to actually go blind, but you need glasses to watch the telly or something like... Well, how would we know, Geoffrey? Yeah. How would we know? How would we find out?
Exactly.
What do you mean exactly? I'm asking you. What would you... You can't... So what? A dog starts moving closer to the telly, for example?
I mean, sometimes I admire a cat. I put something down for him and he's looking around all over the shop before he actually finds what I've put down for him.
So you think your cat might be? You think your cat might be losing his sight?
Well, he might just be long-sighted.
Oh, I see what you mean. Okay, yeah, we will endeavour to find out for you. I know they can get cataracts, Julie reminds us, but that's not quite what you mean. Did you apparently? And Sam might be yanking my chain on this one. Sam says it's an embarrassment of pandas.
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 Where?
An embarrassment of pandas. And a flamboyance of flamingo. I'm going to put that one back on the list, as well as the quarter panda, says Keith. Stop it. So, do other animals have deteriorating eyesight, i.e. you're never going to actually lose your eyesight, but you are going to need glasses later in life. I know dogs can lose their sight in old age, which suggests that, yes, because some of them will lose some of their sight. But, well, anyway, you got the question. And number two, adding that one to the list, although it means that whoever asked it may not be able to win the board game this week, because I've forgotten who asked it originally. A little bit more about the board game in a moment. But the question of who names collective nouns? Where do collective nouns come from? Some of them are quite beautiful. I always thought a murder of crows was the best, but that was before I found out about a panda, an embarrassment of pandas and a flamboyance of flamingos. Thank you, Geoffrey. Helen is in Bonus in Scotland. Helen, question or answer?
Hello, it's a question. Can I just add to those collective nouns? Because I learned one recently.
Yeah.
A tower of giraffes.
Oh, that's a nice one as well.
It's good, isn't it? We got it in a quiz recently.
Fantastic.
My cousin had the answer. Yeah, it was a good
tower
one.
Tower of giraffes.
And a kaleidoscope of butterflies.
Oh, be quiet. Are you serious?
I'm serious, and I know that because my husband's terrified of butterflies.
Is he really?
Yeah, you can't go to a butterfly house in a
zoo.
Well,
obviously, you couldn't do it. But, yeah. I mean, what if one just flutters by in the garden?
Oh, he doesn't that? Oh, yeah. Well, okay,
really?
We get moths. We get moths sometimes in the house. Same reaction.
And you have to deal with them?
Yeah.
Where does it stem from? Do we know?
I don't know. I really don't know.
Because clowns and balloons, usually something in childhood would have happened that was quite...
Did he have some childhood trauma?
I bet he did. I bet one got under his netting on his pram or something like that. And
yeah,
it was...
Maybe he suppressed it, so he can't even remember what it is.
It's a bunter of Johnson's, Darren tells us. A bunter of Johnson's. And a kaleidoscope of Keith's. No, you can't have that one, Reuben. That's already been bagged by butterflies. Where were we? Question or answer?
It's a question. Can people be allergic to potentially anything? Like, is there anything out there that is impossible for anyone to be allergic to? Like any plant or food or anything in the world that it's just no one in the world can possibly be allergic to it?
Where does that... I like that question. Where does it come from?
Well, my cousin was over for dinner at the weekend and she was bringing over this Mexican lasagna she'd made. So we thought, right, let's do a guacamole.
Mexican lasagna?
Oh,
by all that is holy,
honestly,
Helen.
Honestly, it's the best thing I've ever
really?
Had. And it's a healthy eating recipe as well. So instead of lasagna, it like uses wrap instead of lasagna. Honestly, it was ridiculous.
There's not much chance of that. It's not lasagna then, is it? It's more of a chimichanga or something like that.
Yeah, and tasted and felt like a lasagna.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we said, oh, well, why don't we make some guacamole to go with it? And she said, well, I can't because I'm allergic to avocados. And I thought, I've never heard of anyone being allergic to avocados. So it just made me think.
There's another topic for a rainy day or an election day, isn't there? Which is the most unlikely allergies, without like wanting to make light of anyone's condition. But there, I mean, if an avocado is unexpected, I wonder what else could be on that list. Where you go, really?
That's
you're allergic to?
That's what I want to know.
Okay, I like it. It's a good question. I was going to say water, but people can be it's hydro something or other. You can be allergic to water.
Can I say one more thing?
Yeah, of course you can. It's your show.
We came to see you in Glasgow. And I just, first of all, it was great. But second of all, I have to apologise for my aforementioned husband because he fangirled so hard at the end when we met you that the verbal diarrhoea was just, I'd just like to apologise on his behalf.
Don't be ridiculous. I think perhaps he'd seen a butterfly behind me and it was such a lovely evening. Thank you. And nobody did anything that needs to be apologised for during the signing afterwards. They're some of my most lovely, lovely times. Thank you, Helen, and love to your husband as well. I'm not going to ask any further details. Because I don't want to embarrass him by identifying factors. It's already bad enough that people are associating himself with the butterflies. I just watched The Lost City. I don't know if you've seen it. It's not bad at all. The Sandra Bullock and Channing Tatum film with a superb cameo from Brad Pitt and quite a big role for Daniel Radcliffe playing very much against type. And there's an allergy to water in that, actually. I know it's only a film, but people can be allergic to water. So is there anything that is non-allergenic? Is there anything that I like that question, although I don't know who's going to be able to answer it. 13 after 12 is the time. Fatima is in Mile End. Fatima, what's your question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry
Hello.
On.
My question is, if water is clear, why then, when there's waterfalls or even when we have waves, do we see it come up as white?
It's to do with light, isn't it? More than water, probably. or froth. Why am I talking?
You're trying to answer the question.
Yeah, but I've got no idea.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of this question was actually posed by my 11-year-old son, who's now 12.
It's a good question. It's taking you that long to get through. I can only apologise. Yes.
No, this was a couple of months ago, okay. So he's turned 12 now. But yes, so his question was, Mum, what if water is clear?
Which it is.
Then why at waterfalls do we see it as it's all white everywhere? And then also when the waves come in, and it's like, obviously we can say that's froth, but it's still white. Why is that?
I like that. The answer's going to involve light, but no way I'm giving myself a round of applause for that. Fatima, what's your son's name, if you don't mind me asking?
Eunice.
Eunice, okay. So I'll put him on the list rather than you, in case there is a mystery out board game.
Like
that, yes. No, I don't want any lobbying. It's not that kind of show. Thank you, Fatima. That's a really good question. I can't believe we've never had it before. I keep mentioning the board game. It is available. And whoever gives me the best question or answer this week, the decision's entirely mine. It's utterly arbitrary. Not arbitrary, subjective. Gets a copy. If you don't win, you can get one anyway at mysteryhour.co.uk. And if you go to the website, you can see the full terms and conditions for this competition, like a proper grown-up radio show.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
17 minutes after 12 is the time. They must do. There's a lovely tweet, but I can't really take answers by tweet. Animals deteriorating eyesight. Do animals suffer from deteriorating eyesight? Where do collective nouns come from? We've resurrected that one from a couple of weeks ago because it's such a peach of a question, and there are some real beauties coming in as well. Problem is now, when you're texting them to me, I can't tell which ones are a joke and which ones are not. So this is nice. An obstinacy of buffaloes, a lamentation of swans, and one for Theo, says Niall in Edinburgh, a rumba of rattlesnakes. Is this true? I think it is true. Some really lovely ones. But again, some of them are jokes as well. For example, this one can't be real, from Dean in Devon. A pencil case of mogs. What does that mean, a pencil case of mogs? Lauren's in Ealing. Lauren, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
Can babies be scared of the dark?
Why do you want to know?
My brother had his first ever baby.
First ever baby.
Days.
First ever baby.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
First ever baby. just a couple of days ago. And I was going to ask him how he's coping with the new baby because he's a first time dad. So yeah. He's not used to being woken up so much. And he had a theory. He was saying he's not settling well. And he had a theory that his baby is scared of the dark. And I was a bit like, but what do they do in the womb?
I don't know if that's quite the zinger that it might have been. Because, I mean, we always have nightlights, don't we? What are nightlights for?
You do use nightlights for tiny days old
babies. Yeah. Use nightlights from the start. But I never knew whether they were so that Mum and Dad wouldn't fall over their own feet when they come in the middle of the night, or whether it was in order to to comfort the baby. The womb-based question, I don't think they have their eyes open when they're in the womb.
In that case, the baby just close his eyes and he'll be fine.
You would have thought
anyway.
So. I love the question. But, yeah. Is this your first ever nephew?
Yes.
So yeah. Congratulations to you as well.
Nephew, anything. I don't have a niece, so it's my first ever.
What's the word? What's the collective noun for?
What's the word?
I don't know. Is it when you need a collective noun for, like, your cousins? Cousins is gender neutral, isn't it?
Exactly.
What's the combination of nephews and nieces? But anyway, whatever it is, you've got your first one.
Cool, yes.
Congratulations. Yes. We'll find out for you. I mean, our babies, how would you know? You can't ask a baby. Can anyone remember? 03456060973. Gary's in Sheffield. Gary, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on.
By the way, full disclosure, wonderful, James.
Thank you.
Great show.
Oh, cheers, Gary.
And just a query.
Yeah.
We were discussing it, a few of us, yesterday, and we haven't got an answer.
That's what we're here for.
You know, the brown rain that we get occasionally,
yeah,
and specifically in Spain and the parts of the Med.
We had it here quite. Did you not get it in Sheffield a couple of months ago? We got a really bad dose.
Yes,
you did.
Yeah. We did very thick. Yeah. Yeah, that's blown from the Sahara. Yeah,
supposedly yes.
Now, with that happening every year, and particularly in southern Med, it covers the cars and the houses, etc.
Mm.
So there are thousands of tons, potentially in the sky, blowing towards that part of the world. Will the Sahara run out of sand eventually? And if so, how is that replaced? If not, how is that replaced? And if so, will the Sahara be sandless in millennia to come?
Well, what would it be? What's underneath all the sand?
More sand. But eventually, it's all going to go.
But there's not... I love this question. There's not that much sand blowing into the sky. It doesn't happen that often, does it? I mean, the Sahara's pretty big, Gary.
It's massive, but eventually, James, if that continues...
No, I'm not having that. You can't. Is the Sahara ever going to run out of sand?
Yes.
No. What, you mean in millennia? You mean in millions of years?
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Potentially, could that run out of sand?
Could, yeah. All right. I mean, it seems unlikely, but you're not going to accept that as an answer.
It does.
It's
no.
Wheelie bins. The wheelie bins in the car is where you notice the sand, isn't it?
Exactly.
Bins are covered in it. You can't clean. I feel an idiot trying to clean a wheelie bin. It seems like one of the oddest things you could be doing. But
James, if my car's covered in it, up in Sheffield, how many thousands of tons are in the air when it comes over?
It's got all the way to Sheffield. It stops off on the way. All right, I'll find out. thank you, and hopefully this will settle a conversation from your private life. Saharan sand, does it run out? Could it ever run out? Go on then. Mel's in Brighton. Mel, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on, Mel. I'm coming to Brighton tonight, actually, would you believe?
Oh! Yeah. Why did I not know that?
Well, it's for journalism students, believe it or not. Poor things, don't know what they've let themselves in for. I don't think it's for the public, this one. But never mind.
It's the waterfall question.
Oh, yes.
Why are waterfalls white when water's clear?
Yes.
It's the same reason that clouds are white. The droplets are really, really close together, so light goes into it, gets split into the colours of the rainbow, obviously.
Yes.
But it then goes into another droplet, and that scatters it out, and it goes into another. And eventually you just have all the light being mixed together, so it mixes back into white light.
Oh,
so
wow.
So clouds and waterfalls are basically crap rainbows.
Very nicely and poetically put. I think that's all right, isn't it, on the Ofcom list of words? Just about. But give me a warning. Give me a warning next time. You could have said rubbish rainbows, and then you'd have had the pleasure of alliteration as well. Qualifications, Mel?
Yeah. Physics teacher.
That'll do nicely. Round of applause for Mel.
Thank you.
No, thank you. I thought it was light, but I needed an expert to explain why. 23 minutes after 12 is the time. Mike is in Manchester. Mike, question or answer? That was for Eunice, that one, wasn't it? We've answered Eunice's question. I hope he's pleased. Carry on, Mike. What's the question?
People have different thickness eyelids.
Do people have different thickness of eyelids?
Yeah.
Why do you want to know?
Because every time when me and my wife are trying to go to sleep, if my phone goes off or if I've left the toothbrush on charge in the corner, she kicks off and complains that there's a flashing light to keep her awake and I can't see it.
Ah, okay. Actually, that is not unfamiliar to me either. Not with your wife, obviously, but in the context of some lights. I get more bothered by light than my wife does, I think. Or is it the other way around? I can't remember. I'm usually asleep. So you think your eyelids are thicker than your wife's rather than your sleep is deeper?
Yeah, I think so, because we're not quite asleep yet, because I can hear her whinging when she gets off going and unplug something or cover
she's
her
not
up.
Whinging. She's raising a very valid objection to your nocturnal arrangements. We'll do
possibly.
It. Possibly. Thickness of eyelids. I love that question. Oh, carry on. Thank you, Mike. Take care. 03456060973. So thickness of eyelids, Saharan sand, babies scared of the dark. We've done the white water one. Allergies, collective nouns. Guess what the collective noun? There is a collective noun. Lauren will be delighted for her new nephew. Do you know that? And I've had this from a few people, so you haven't made it up, although I did struggle to believe it when I first saw it. Do you know what the collective noun is for nieces and nephews? You do know. Oh, you saw it on the screen. Nibblings. You're so cute. 12:24, Chris is in Tewkesbury. Chris, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on.
You probably had it before, but why is the alphabet in the alphabetical order?
It's chicken and egg, is it? I mean, well, yeah. Alphabetical order. Yeah, okay, you're on. Why is it in the order that it's in? I think we may have had it before, but I'm not getting anything. There's nothing coming through. I sound like conducting a seance, don't I, rather than desperately trying to search my memory banks for something that might resemble the beginnings of an answer. So, alpha, beta, gamma, delta. I mean, Greek is the original, I think. Alpha, omega, alpha, beta, gamma, delta, epsilon, zeta. Why did they... No, I got nothing. Why do you want to know? Just curiosity.
Pure curiosity, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I know. I like it a lot. Why is the alphabet in the order that the alphabet is in? It may not have an answer, but we will endeavour to find one if it does exist. 12:25 is the time. Sarah is in Isha. Sarah, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
Babies aren't scared of the dark when they're that little. They only start getting scared when they're toddlers.
Oh.
Because that's when they get an imagination and they start.
Oh, come on. Making... Really?
No, it's true. I'm telling you, I've done a lot of reading about this because I'm a mother of a 2-year-old and I was obsessed with sleep when he was little and still now, obviously.
Yes.
And so, in fact, pure darkness is the best way of getting them to sleep.
Wow.
And sleep training. It's like pure darkness, like pitch black is brilliant. So, unfortunately, your caller's brother is just going through that beginning stage of
the baby's
tiny
not settling
baby.
For reasons other than the darkness
and wants
of
cuddles
the
and stuff and just wants that closeness because in the womb, you know, they're all huddled up and I suggest swaddling. Just
yes.
putting that out there.
No, fair enough. So they, yeah. it sort of recreates the close.
Yeah.
The conditions of the womb, I remember
exactly.
that. Changes.
And
I don't want to sound like an
and
old
kid.
Yeah, you know, Wayne Rooney still needs white noise to get to sleep. Did you know that?
Did you know I do also?
What do you do? Put the Hoover on? Or what do you do?
We put on a fan, just a fan. Even in the winter, I just need something. I can't sleep in silence.
You need a little buzz in the background. Have you tried the radio? Have you tried the radio?
With you guys
could,
on it?
Well, not
or?
Me, obviously. You'd never get any, but I could recommend a few who might yeah. might have you nodding off. Qualifications for answering this? You've kind of hinted at it.
A mum and done lots of research during maternity. Yeah,
I think
and,
that's fair
you know.
Enough. I think that's yeah. fair enough. Round of applause, please, for Sarah.
Thank you so much.
Very nicely played. And that is for Lauren's brother. The mystery is solved. It is 27 minutes after 12. Patrice, what a lovely name, is in Woolwich. Patrice, question or answer? Pardon?
Sorry, that's my little boy in the background.
Right, I like the sound of him. What's his name?
It's Leo.
I'm not on the radio yet, am I? You've turned the radio off, so Leo can't hear me.
No, he can't hear
right,
you. He
never
can't
mind
hear
then.
You.
How old is he?
He's two. He just turned two.
Be careful, won't you? He's about to start getting afraid of the dark. Carry
maybe.
On.
I think he's there already.
Go on.
So it was a question about, well, your producer actually just put it more succinctly for me. it's about handwriting. So a few weeks ago, my brother sent me something in the post.
Yeah.
And his handwriting looked so much like my mom's that it just stopped me in my tracks.
Oh.
But my mom passed away when he was 15.
Right.
We were 15. I had always assumed that your handwriting looked like your parents because you were always around them.
Yes.
So I want to know, is handwriting inherited? So yeah, how has that happened?
Well,
that his handwriting.
Where did your mom? Where did your mum go to school?
Well, London.
And where did your brother go to school?
Somewhere in London. Southwest London.
There might be a clue there. I mean, it might just be the way that handwriting is taught in schools.
My handwriting looks completely different. Well, sort of, yeah, it's very different to theirs.
Does it?
So it's quite cursive, yeah. But they...
What does
I
that
think
mean?
I always thought that her handwriting looked similar to my grandma's handwriting. And, so, but I always
What's Leo's handwriting like?
His handwriting is fantastic. It's got scribbles and everything.
He can draw with a rusk and a crayon. It can write volumes. And it's because you lost your mum when you were young that you think it won't be just that he saw her handwriting a lot in his formative years.
Yeah, because I couldn't. Yeah, he was young, so
not that young.
That's what made me question it.
Not that young. I mean, he would have developed his handwriting style before he was 15, wouldn't he?
Well, do you think? Because I thought I had changed my handwriting a little bit since then, and it's come to what it is now since I've been quite young.
Yeah.
But
do you ever feed that child? The poor kid is starving in the back of the car. Was it lunchtime?
Please don't say that because my dad will be listening probably, and he will say
what?
That as well.
Really? You're safe. Would you feed Leo? Patrice, would you feed that boy? Honestly, I'll try and find out for you. It's a lovely question, actually, but I can't imagine there be a genetic inheritance. But then you think about, you know, finger shape or something. I don't know. I'll find out. Does it make you feel a bit left out, Patrice? Is that part of What's going on here?
He does. Yeah, he does. He walks on the phone. He thinks you're his dad, but that's...
Bye-bye, Leo. Have a nice lunch. It's 12:30. Let's... Amelia Cox is here now with the headlines.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
It's 12:33. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Theo Walsh, it's Mystery Hour. This better be important.
Very quick, because it's Mystery Hour.
What are you doing?
We understand that Sue Gray's report is going to be published next week. It has to go to the Prime Minister's office first. They get to look at it and they intend to publish it as they receive it as far as possible. So that they're leaving the door open, of course, to possible redactions. They've made it clear previously that only the Prime Minister's name...
I thought they'd committed to publish it in full. Previously.
As far as possible.
What does that mean?
Well, it means that they reserve the right to make redactions when it comes to protecting the identities of civil servants and officials.
Right, but not politicians.
But not politicians.
So we shall see, because they could, I mean, they could row back from that.
We still
don't
know whether the Chancellor, Rishi Sunak, is still ambiguous, it was described to us, as to whether he's received a second fine. And also the Cabinet Secretary, Simon Case, the most senior civil servant. Yeah. There may be some delay in this latest round of fixed penalty notices.
Or the Prime Minister's wife?
Maybe. No, we do have that confirmed.
That's just the one,
that's
is
been,
it?
That's just the one.
So they're not serial offenders, they're just offenders.
So they attended six parties and they were fined for only one of them. So they attended five of those parties legally.
That's bizarre.
Well, the Prime Minister did, sorry.
Because it was his house, probably.
That's the obvious one for November the 13th.
But everybody else there
one.
Would have been breaking the law.
Because it's his house. Bring your own, booze party, of course. That's obviously
and that fella's gone now. He's getting the gig in Saudi Arabia, the bloke who organised the... Is it Jeremy Haywood?
No. Martin Reynolds.
Martin, yes.
Principal
Martin
Private
Reynolds,
Secretary.
Which Cummings predicted in January. Did you see that?
Yes. So there's obviously the position of ambassador in Saudi Arabia.
Yes, coming up. Thank you. Thank you for the kind words about the listening figures as well.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Congratulations.
No, I'm not saying sorry. You said it off air. I didn't mean you had to say it on air as well. It's lovely. I've had some very kind words from colleagues. Eddie Mayer tweeted something quite beautiful, which is very special to me because he's one of my heroes. Sheila's always very kind. Steve Allen this morning was incredibly generous about the new numbers. Ian Dale is always very, very appreciative. It's hard to think of anyone who isn't, to be honest with you. And I've just had a lovely message from Gordon Astley, who is a broadcaster of, probably won't thank me for telling you how many years, but Gordon was on Beacon Radio in Wolverhampton when I was a kid. I was a schoolboy. He was the first radio presenter that I ever really became aware of, because normally it was just a voice between records. But I used to listen to Gordon Astley. He had the best jingle. I've told you before. You must remember this. He had the best jingle. Gordon, drives away your boredom. If you wake up feeling ghastly, tune in to Gordon Astley. That is just still the best jingle I've ever heard in my life. And he's just sent me a lovely message as well. So thank you, everybody, who's taken a couple of minutes today to make an oldish man feel very, very lucky. 12:36 is the time. Back to Mystery Hour. Vivian's in Hitchin. Vivian, question or answer?
Hi, James. It's a question.
Carry on.
So it's been bothering me for about 2 weeks, and I had to just call in.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, in the car the other day when I was eating chewing gum, how come I never swallow this by mistake? So when I eat anything else, if I chew it for long enough, I'll swallow it. Now, I know the clue's in the name, it says chewing gum, but what is it that stops me swallowing that by mistake?
I think I know this. But only through thinking, not through like knowledge or anything. But it's because it doesn't break down.
But it's still small enough.
No, it's not, though. No, it really isn't.
Oh.
If it doesn't break down, does it? So you're chewing it, but the message from mouth to brain is that this isn't ready to swallow yet. Because if you swallow something that big enough to get a good old chew going, then you might run the risk of choking yourself if you swallow it. So the message from mouth to brain is don't swallow me, until I've broken it down a bit more by chewing. So you carry on chewing. But, of course, it never breaks down. Ergo, the message to your brain never says... Let's swallow it.
Are you a two-piece or a one-piece man of gum?
Gum? I do you know what? I've started on the Tic Tacs again lately, between you and
man.
Me. But it's a bit risky because I've got a slight hairline fracture in one of my molars on the right-hand side. The dentist says it's not time yet to do anything about it. But if I crunch a Tic Tac at the wrong moment, oh, my God, it's like Marathon Man. It's like Laurence Olivier and Dustin Hoffman in Marathon Man. It's pretty painful. So, no, I don't know why I went off gum, but I shall... I'll keep you posted, Vivian, I promise.
Thank you very much.
Do I get a round of applause for that? Or do you want to wait for an expert?
What are your qualifications, James? That you chew gum?
I've explained it. This is how do you think knowledge happens? Someone has to be the first to work it out, don't they? This is like, I'm a pioneer of gum-based trivia.
Pioneer. I'll nominate you for the Nobel Peace Prize or something.
Nobel Prize for biology. All right, I won't take the round of applause, but I jolly well deserve it. Vivian, take care. Souk is in Romford. Souk, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on, Souk.
It's regarding the, can you be allergic to anything? And the answer is yes. So your body can produce IgE antibodies to pretty much anything at any time throughout your lifetime. So you can be eating strawberries one year, and the following year you can find you're allergic to it.
Qualifications?
Can I mention the name of my company?
Yeah, of course you can. Well, it depends what it is. I mean, you see, you're not doing anything nefarious, are you, or dodgy?
No, not at all. I work for a company called Thermo Fisher, and they do allergy tests nationwide through the NHS via a blood test. And one of the things we check for is specific IgE antibodies within your bloodstream to tell you if you're allergic or not.
And anything that you can put into your body or anything that your body can come into contact with could, at some point in someone, prompt an allergic reaction.
It can, yeah. So the first time, your body produces the antibodies to it, and the second time, your reaction tends to be a lot stronger.
Well, there you go. Lovely qualifications as well. I mean, not quite Ray Liotta territory, but well above the usual standard of qualifications. So it earns you definitely a round of applause, Souk. What's the weirdest allergy you've ever come across?
Oh, so human semen.
Oh, my God. Mate, you could have... Oh, yeah, that would be tricky. That would definitely be tricky. Thank you, Souk. It's 12:40. Well, it was good while it lasted. Thanks for all the listening figures. 12:40 is the time. This is the closest I've ever come to corpsing. Stu's in Plymouth. Stu, change the subject quick.
Hi, James.
All right, Stu.
Good to speak to you again.
Yeah, likewise.
I've got a question for you this time.
Carry on.
If all the ships and the boats and the vessels around the world were taken out of the water, would there be a noticeable drop in the sea level?
I mean, noticeable meaning what?
Well, sort of, I don't know, half a metre.
Because do you know what a gauging lock is?
A gauging rock?
Lock with an L.
No.
Gauging locks fascinate me. That's when there's one on the Grand Union Canal where they would be able to work out what the cargo was on a canal boat by seeing how much the water went up in the lock. And
So
the premise of your question is that is the sea an enormous gauging lock? But I don't think there'd be enough boats and ships in the world to make a difference to the sea level. I just can't see it. Can you? It's a bit like the Sahara Desert question, isn't it?
Yeah, I was thinking when that caller was asking that question, I thought this is stealing my thunder a little bit here on a different
track. Yeah.
But with climate change and everything, we're talking about the polar.
No, I'll put it on the list. If you took every vessel out of every sea in the world, would you?
If you rid the oceans and the seas of anything that floats in it, would there be a noticeable drop in the sea levels?
You're on. All right, it's on the board. Nice one, Stu. Very appropriate that you're ringing from Plymouth. Oh, because you'd be the first to notice. 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. Jack's in Padstow. I was talking about you yesterday and you didn't ring in.
I tell you, I just missed it. You know,
big smiley face in the Times newspaper. Get you? We knew you when you were nobody.
One day I'll be famous enough to just like Jamie yesterday sit in the bottom of the LBC office waiting to come on.
Hijack me on the way in. Jack Stein. Well, question or answer?
So I used to read the Argos catalogue a lot when I was younger.
Yes.
And I used to notice on the watch section, there's a couple of questions. One's been put first, I've been put once before. But the question I had is, Roman numerals on a clock face for the number 4 is 1111, not 1V.
Right.
And I don't know why.
Why is it a mystery? Sorry,
normally, it goes 1, then 1-1, then 1-1-1, then 1-V, but on a clock face, the number 4 is 1-1-1-1.
I I imagine the answer is, and don't laugh, but there's only three lines on an IV, and there's four lines on a and then that doesn't work as an answer, does it?
Because you have V1 as V1 would be whatever the number. I don't do number anything rules because my Latin's not very good, but it does have a V1. So I don't understand why they would have got rid of the one V and replaced it with 4-1.
Harder to make a V than it is to make a straight line.
But if there's
they've got the V for the 5, haven't they? And the and the other bit.
It's boring as sin, but
it's
you know.
Not boring at all now. This is pure mystery hour. This is an essence of mystery hour question. I've got nothing. I've literally got nothing. I'm even checking watches now to see whether or not you're actually right, but you are. I had never noticed that before. The one about why is it always at 10 past 10, I've got that one off pat. I've been doing that one for years.
I tried that one before, and they said, framing
partly framing the name, and partly it looks like a smile. Just looks nice and happy in a watch shop.
There you go.
You're on. All right. I shall. Okay. Why is it I as opposed to IV?
Thank you.
I know. You're welcome. We shall no doubt speak about issues affecting the catering sector, the hospitality sector at some point again soon. 12:45 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Why do watch faces have four ones, as in the Roman? There's an alternative. You can have two ways of saying four in Roman numerals. It can be 1111, or it can be 15, 1V, as in 1 before 5. What's 1 before 5? 1 before 5 is 4. So why do they do it that way around? There must be an answer to that. I like horology questions. 12:45.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
It is 12:48. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Do animals suffer from deteriorating eyesight? Who dreams up collective nouns? We've done that one. Does the Sahara run the risk of running out of sand for Gary and Sheffield there, given that it falls out of the sky so often? Do people have different thickness of eyelids? Why is the alphabet ordered in the way that the alphabet is ordered? Can you inherit handwriting? I've answered this one, but Vivian wasn't satisfied. Gum. Okay, why don't we swallow gum more often? If you took all the ships out of all the seas in all the world, why did you walk into this one? No, if you took all the ships out of all the seas in all the world, would the sea level rise noticeably? And why do watches have the number four in Roman numerals represented with four ones as opposed to an I and a V? We're never going to get through all of these, but if you can answer any of them, move quickly and we'll rattle through. Let's go to Alan in Glasgow first. Alan, question or answer?
Hi, James. It's an answer.
Carry on.
It's for the Sahara Desert question.
Yes, good man.
Your caller actually opened up a can of worms. It's not as easy.
Oh,
but my best guess is that no, that it wouldn't run out because there's a relationship between the velocity of wind and atmospheric currents with the deposition of sand. So, for instance, the higher the velocity, then the heavier the grains are able to be transported. The lower the velocity, the lower the grains. So when you go out and you go on your car and you see dust on top of your car window screen, it's always that finer material. So what happened is the wind has only been able to transport the finer stuff, but it's left behind all the heavier stuff.
Right.
So
yes, okay. So it would be replenishing in a way then, in a way.
Yeah.
I don't know why I said in a way twice.
you would replenish it with the heavier stuff, but then the can of worms opens up because in the present to short term, the Sahara probably won't disappear, but in the longer term, then it probably would disappear. Because,
but you mean in millions of years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if the climate change were to change, then if it become more humid or maritime climate, then you're going to stop getting deposition of sand and you're going to get deposition of organic material and then the desert would disappear.
Yeah. Qualifications? It's an amazing answer.
I've got a PhD in paleoclimatology.
Do nicely, won't it? See, I'm not joking when I say you've been on before, haven't you?
I have.
Yeah.
It was the Antarctica. Desert question to do with Antarctica.
I bet you'd never realise when you did it, your PhD would come in so useful, did you, Alan?
This is the only two times it's ever came in useful.
Have another round of applause. I feel I should offer him more.
Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. Katie's in Brighton. Katie, question or answer?
I'm not quite sure, James, but I really want to share this with you because it fascinates me and I've never found an explanation.
Oh, go on then.
So a friend of my mum's was expecting a baby.
Yes.
And sadly, her husband got killed in a car accident.
Oh.
So as the son grew up,
yes,
the mother reported a really strange thing. So at the end of every meal, the little boy would push his chair back from the table and dust his fingers off over his plate.
Right.
And his father always did that, and they'd never met.
Oh.
So that's kind
of... Is that it?
Yeah.
So he's got nothing to do with handwriting?
Well, no, but, you know, what? How do you explain it? Sorry, I'll give you another question.
It's not mystery. It's not like mystery. It's mystery.
How do you explain it? There's something else going on.
I don't know. I mean, it is fascinating, but yeah. It's not remotely relevant to anything that we're talking about on the programme.
Oh, I think it is.
Do you? All right, yeah. Then. There you go. Have a round of applause.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you. I'll tell you what, after old Souk and the answer to the allergy question, I'm Ash is in Northampton. Ash, question or answer?
Answer for you, James.
Carry on, Ash.
So, ships in the ocean.
Yes.
If you were to take them all out, now the question was, would it make a noticeable difference?
Correct, yes, and I was quite keen to pick up on that.
Yeah, no.
Why not?
Compared to the mass of all the biomass in the ocean, the ship's tonnage is barely registering. So, to make a noticeable difference, if you were to take out all the ships, the biomass, everything that we've put in the oceans, all the garbage, everything, that might make a difference.
Right.
But probably, again, not really noticeable.
But probably not, because the oceans are just so epic and immense.
Well, it's not a closed system, is it? So
no.
you correctly mentioned the gauging lock.
Yes. I'm fascinated by that sort of thing. But that's a very, very closed system by definition. It's barely the length
Precisely.
Of a canal. It's only just a bit longer than the canal boat itself, isn't it? So you're bound to
Precisely.
Be able to...
It's,
or a bathtub, actually, most obviously.
Yes.
Old Archimedes.
So that would be the obvious. That would
Qualifications?
Be the Archimedes. I was a chief officer in the Merchant Navy and a lecturer in stability at Fleetwood Nautical College.
Have you had a Railiota before?
I have, yeah,
yeah,
unfortunately.
I know you have. But I think you might be entitled to another one. I mean, you weren't actually a lecturer in ship stability, because that's not the title of the course, is it? But ship stability is a...
Ship stability is a course, and I was the lecturer of chief mate ship stability.
You can't not have a really... You can't have a flipping lecturer in ship stability coming onto this, can you? How many lectures... I know we did this last time, and I'm short of time, and I was telling off the last lady for using up so much. How many, roughly, do you think there are?
In the country, or in the world?
The country.
In the country, maybe six.
Yeah, and I mean, I suppose that the seminal text in this field would be Derrida, wouldn't it?
Would be what, sorry?
It would be Derrida, wouldn't it? C.B. Barris and D.R. Derrida.
Yes.
Ship stability, wouldn't it?
Ship stability.
Yeah, for masters and mates.
That's the one.
Go on then.
I'm Ray Liotta, and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC.
If you build it,
they will come.
Well played, Ash. Lovely stuff. What do you do now? Because I don't know if I asked you last. I probably did. This show's turning into Groundhog
Day. What do I do now?
Yeah.
I work for an online training company that trains ships officers all over the world.
Fair enough. Excellent stuff. Fantastic. I shouldn't have asked you that. I've learnt my lesson after Souk. Don't throw in any supplementary questions at the end of an enjoyable exchange, because you never know what's going to come back at you, although I can live with that a lot more than I could live with his answer. Sue's in Twickenham. Sue, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Carry on, Sue.
It's to the chewing gum and swallowing
question. Oh, yes.
Your answer was correct, but not complete.
Oh.
And not complete.
Of
no,
course.
No, it was correct.
Thank you.
But some people do actually swallow chewing gum by mistake, but it's both what you said, which is about breaking down the chewing gum to a point where it's suitable for swallowing.
Mm.
But it's also a learning process.
Of course.
In that we have learnt that you put chewing gum in your mouth not to swallow, and not to eat, but to chew. Because
yes.
The first part of chewing and swallowing is under voluntary control.
Yes.
But your second bit, once it reaches the tonsil area, roughly, it's no longer voluntary and you have to swallow it. So basically we keep chewing gum nearer the front of our mouth because that puts it under voluntary control. But if you were to suddenly gasp...
I get it, of course. So you swallow it by accident, it's going to be a shock to the system or something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. And you might have gasped and then it goes too far back in the mouth and then you've got no control. So that's how... And children definitely swallow accidentally. Well, they can easily swallow chewing gum, which is why you shouldn't give it to little children.
So they haven't got they haven't got the learned behaviour in
exactly.
place.
Exactly.
Oh, beautiful answer. Qualifications?
I'm a specialist speech and language therapist in feeding and swallowing.
Yeah, of course you are. And a round of applause.
Thank you.
muted to give another Ray Liotta, but I 12:56 is the time. Sam's in Nottingham. Sam, question or answer?
Hello, James. Answer.
Yeah, quickly. Clocks. Come on.
Okay. Clocks. My father used to make cases for a clockmaker, for tool like grandfather, maybe yeah. not grandfather clocks, oh, but long case clocks.
Yes, yes, yes.
And I was always told as a child, and I may not be right, that it was to do with symmetry.
Yes.
So it's to make the four look larger in correspondence to the eight.
On the other side. Yeah, I think you're right, actually. Qualifications, your granddad told you? That's one of my favourite qualifications.
Dad, actually.
It was your dad. Well, there you go. Round of applause for Sam. Nicely played. So, are we done, Sue? Have we got any more? What else needs answering? How are we doing? Are we going? Well, my days. 12:57 is the time. We didn't do the alphabet one. We haven't done the inherit. Alex is in the Wirral. Alex, question or answer?
Hi there. I've got an answer for you, James.
Carry on.
So it's an answer to the question about dog eyesight.
Or any other animal of your choice.
Or any other animal, yes. I guess the truth answer is we don't know for sure whether they're affected in quite the same way with long-sightedness or short-sightedness, because it's obviously not easy to test. However, dogs in particular, as they get older, get a condition called nuclear sclerosis.
Of course.
Which is where a kind of cloudiness appears within the lens. It's not quite the same as a cataract. People call them cataracts, but they're not. Now, remarkably, their vision is maintained, but we suspect there's going to be some sort of effect, a bit like, you know, slightly clouding, slight lack of clarity in terms of their vision.
Qualifications?
So probably. Professor of Small Animal Medicine at the University of Liverpool.
You just made that up.
No.
Really? Professor of Small... Oh, that's fantastic. Round of applause. No, I've got another Ray Liotta.
I'm Ray Liotta, and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. If you build it, they will.
Congratulations, come. Professor of Small Animal Medicine at the University of Liverpool. That's incredible. We might have to start issuing certificates. That's so on the money. And finally, Mark in Barrow in Furness. Mark, you're almost becoming a weekly occurrence. Let me guess, you're going to do the alphabet question.
Yeah, I am. Well, it goes to that before Greek. It goes to Phoenician and Hebrew and similar languages. And the names of the letters weren't really letter names originally. You can tell that from the word delta, which you can see what it would mean from the shape of it, like an inverted.
It looks like a delta.
You get words like Beth, which is a house, and that became Hebrew Beth, the letter, and then, as in words like Bethel, the house of God, and it became Greek Beta and
so
Latin.
They were like hieroglyphs then, sort
they
of?
They were like hieroglyphs. And other systems were used for ordering at first.
Right.
They started to become used in the order that we know them now. Relatively late in Greek times, because they were used for numbers. Alpha would be 1 and Beta would be 2 and so on. And then there was the catalogue of the Library of Alexandria when they started to come to the order that we have now.
Wow.
And then eventually dictionaries of Latin and Greek in the first century. English didn't start to have dictionaries really till the Middle Ages. They were biblical dictionaries of words in the Bible. And so it wasn't until about the 12th century or 13th century that the order became fixed in the way it is. And of course it differs for different languages. Some languages have different more or fewer letters and so on. But it didn't really settle down for English and for quite a long time, but it settled down for Greek and Latin and so on.
You've done it again. You dazzle me. I'm late for the news or for Sheila.
Yeah.
Go on, you wanted to squeeze in one more quick
nugget. The funniest thing is that some very crazy people once said that the Greek alphabet, as recited, is really a poem in Mayan from Central America.
Blimey.
But no one with any sense believes that.
No, you're not kidding. I love that. That's a linguistic gag. Round of applause for Mark. Lovely stuff.
Thank you.
The man's a genius, honestly. Mark's already got a box. I'm going to give it to Patrice and Leo because his little laughter in the back of the car was so infectious. So Patrice and Leo, although they didn't really get an answer to the question, they have won the Mystery Hour ball game. That's it from me for another day. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 10. Up next, it's Sheila Ferguson.
Thank you, James. Thank you, you're welcome.